John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for not, oh no, my phone's just sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Monday, June the 6th, 2011. On Saturday morning, dozens of Palestinian protesters from the Gaza Strip broke into the Rafah terminal that links between Gaza and Egypt. The Egyptian authorities had decided to close the terminal without warning or coordination with the Palestinian Authority, according to reports. A source in the ruling Hamas party in the Gaza Strip said that at least 180 passengers who had been waiting for several hours on buses to cross into Egypt broke into the gate of the terminal as they were surprised by this sudden closure. Former Minister of Detainees, Hamas political official Wasfi Qabha, stated that there are no real indications of reconciliation in the West Bank, as the Palestinian security forces there are still interrogating Hamas members and supporters. Olivier Zemmour, a French national, has been summoned to appear before the Paris Tribunal for publishing a video on the boycott, divestment and sanctions movement against Israel on the website of the organisation that she is heading. Zemmour is expected to appear before the court on June the 17th. Calls for boycotting Israel are outlawed by the French government. As a result, a number of activists have been standing trial for calling for boycotting Israel. The BDS movement was launched in July 2005 following the International Court of Justice ruling in July 2004 that the wall Israel is building on the occupied West Bank is illegal, and called for boycotting companies, bodies and groups that directly or indirectly contribute to constructing this illegal wall. Zemmour is also involved in calls for Europeans to come to Palestine in July as part of a plan for 1 week of non-violent action in solidarity with the Palestinian people. Israeli media sources said a few days ago that the Israeli government is planning to thwart this event and is expected to deny the activists entry to Israel at Ben Gurion Airport. At a march organised by a number of Israeli centre-left groups, around 5,000 protesters marched through the streets of downtown Tel Aviv on Saturday night, calling for a Palestinian state on the 1967 borders. Participants in the march and rally included non-governmental organisations Peace Now and Gush Shalom, and political parties Meretz, Labour and the Derech faction of the Kadima Party. Syrian media sources allege that Israeli soldiers shot and killed 24 protesters on Sunday. The protesters gathered on the Syrian side of the border of the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights, marking Naxa Day, which commemorates the setback of the 1967 war. At least 350 were injured, according to the same sources. Eyewitnesses told media agencies that the Israeli army used live ammunition, gas bombs, and phosphorus munition, and that the soldiers were directly aiming at the protesters, leading to a large group number of casualties. The Israeli army denies these reports. In a related protest, a fresh round of violence erupted in the West Bank as Palestinians marched for the right of return to their homes in what is now Israel. The West Bank town of Qalandia, near Ramallah, was the scene of clashes between local youth and the Israeli military, after the Israeli military attacked a march commemorating Naxa Day. The military rushed the small demonstration of 100 people as it approached the checkpoint in Qalandia, using tear gas and stun grenades to disperse the crowd. The military broke into local homes, using the rooftops as a means to fire tear gas into protests and stone-throwing youth. Israeli forces also fired rubber bullets at head height into crowds of protesters, seriously injuring two. Scores of people were treated for tear gas inhalation, according to Red Cross personnel. A small group of men later trickled through military lines and linked arms during a sit-down protest in front of the checkpoint. The military pushed the small crowd back using noxious water cannons. On Monday, as a result of these clashes, the Israeli army has deployed dozens of extra units at the border with Syria. A Palestinian worker was killed on Monday at dawn when a tunnel collapsed on him at the Gaza-Egypt border in Rafah, in the southern part of the Gaza Strip, according to the Arabs 48 news website. Adham Abu Salmiya, media spokesperson of the Emergency and Medical Services in the Gaza Strip, reported that Khan Yunis resident Sami Ahmad Anadi, 22, suffocated to death after the tunnel collapsed on him. More than 160 Palestinians have been killed in similar tunnel accidents since Israel imposed its siege on Gaza in 2006. Hundreds of tunnels are used to smuggle products into the Gaza Strip, which has been under strict siege for the past 5 years. It is widely believed that the tunnels are also used to smuggle weaponry as well as essential products. In an indication of the severity of the ongoing siege, nearly 170 medicines and 140 other medical items are currently out of stock in the Gaza Strip. The Ministry of Prisoners Affairs in Gaza has released a report alleging that 370 people were detained by the Israeli military in the occupied territories during May. Of the 370, a total of 40 were below the age of 15. In related news, the Palestinian Authority claims that guards at an Israeli prison have detained a 13-year-old girl who was visiting her father there. She has been accused of attempting to smuggle things to her father and is awaiting trial in Beersheba. Visiting rights and access to prisoners, most of whom are political prisoners, are often severely restricted, leaving children as the sole link between prisoners and their families. That's all for today from the IMEMC. This was Monday, the 6th of June's daily roundup of news from the occupied Palestinian territories. We hope that you will join us again tomorrow. This report has been brought to you by Hossam Qassis and me, David Steele.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Centre, www.imemc.org, for Tuesday, June 7th, 2011. The US has signalled that it intends to maintain its leading position in facilitating Middle East peace talks with its announcement of discussions aimed at renewing the peace process. US Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has announced that the US is holding separate discussions with Palestinian and Israeli negotiators in an attempt to kickstart negotiations between the two sides. The announcement has come as French Foreign Minister Alain Juppé released French proposals for a peace conference in June, which Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas immediately accepted. Israel is currently reviewing the French proposal. Three men have been arrested in the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights town of Majd al-Shams, according to PNN. The three were protesting those killed during protests by Palestinian refugees at the Syrian side of the border during Naxa Day. Israel has permanently stationed three battalions and declared a closed military zone in the normally quiet area. There has been an outburst of violence between mourners of those killed at Israel's border on Naxa Day and Palestinian resistance group PFLP, according to reports at AFP. AFP is reporting that 14 Palestinians from the Yarmouk refugee camp in Syria, have been killed by Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine security forces during angry clashes prompted by the death of those killed at Syria's border to Israel on Naxa Day. The group claimed that the PFLP encouraged those killed to put themselves in the firing line. The local PFLP headquarters were also burnt down, according to witnesses. Israeli soldiers abducted on Tuesday at dawn Hamas legislator, member of the Change and Reform parliamentary bloc, Sheikh Ahmed Al-Haj, after breaking into his home in the northern West Bank city of Nablus. Al-Haj has been repeatedly targeted administrative detention by Israeli forces. The Israeli Interior Ministry and the so-called Construction and Planning Committee are preparing to officially approve 4,100 units for Jewish settlers in occupied East Jerusalem. A special committee appointed 2 months ago by Israeli Interior Minister Eli Yishai will be holding its first session on June 14th to look into approving 4,100 units in the illegal settlements. The Palestinian Authority in the West Bank is conducting preparations to ask for official membership at the World Trade Organization. The official Palestine news and info agency WAFA reported that Palestinian Economy Minister Hassan Abu Libdeh headed a meeting of the ministry's technical advisory team and instructed the team to conduct all needed preparations for this move. The PA has twice tried to join the WTO, once in 2009 and once in 2010. If not successful, PA officials say they will request observer status. Local residents of Al-Mughayr village near the central West Bank city of Ramallah reported Tuesday at dawn that fundamentalist settlers set the local mosque ablaze and wrote racist graffiti on its walls, Palestine Today has reported. Witnesses stated that the Israeli settlers set fire to the mosque at approximately 3 a.m. on Wednesday at dawn before daubing the remains with racist slogans. The arson attack is thought to be a price tag attack carried out by nearby settlers in response to the demolition of El Ayin, a legal outpost by Israeli police recently. And that's all for today from the IMEMC. This was Tuesday, 7th of June's daily roundup of news from the occupied Palestinian territories. We hope you will join us again tomorrow. This was brought to you by Hussam Kassis and me, Kevin Murphy.
Baghdad, Iraq. Yesterday, 5 U.S. soldiers were killed after rockets hit their quarters in Camp Loyalty, a joint U.S. base in Baghdad. 5 more soldiers were wounded in the attack. Nasiriyah, Iraq. Saturday night, 3 Katusha rockets hit U.S. Air Base Talil with no casualties reported. That time they got lucky. Monday they didn't. Lagman Province, Afghanistan. Saturday, 4 U.S. soldiers were killed by a roadside bomb while on a motorized patrol. Their names were released today by the Department of Defense. Afghanistan, Sunday, a NATO helicopter crashes in coast, killing 2 people on board of undisclosed nationality. As usual, NATO denies any evidence of hostile action. However, according to Reuters, a Taliban spokesman says the helicopter was shot down, and witnesses reported seeing it catch fire in the air and belch black smoke before it crashed. Most NATO forces there are American soldiers. Afghanistan. Today, police found the beheaded body of Jawad Zahak, head of the provincial council in Bamiyan, a province thought safe from insurgent activity, dumped by the side of the road. Pakistan. Saturday, a U.S. drone strike in Pakistan's South Waziristan tribal region killed at least 7 people, officials reported Saturday. The U.S. shortly afterwards claimed to have killed Al-Qaeda leader Ilyas Kashmiri, but it has since come out that some U.S. sources are skeptical it was really him. Pakistani officials report they are certain it was. Tikrit, Iraq, yesterday. A suicide bomber blew himself up at the gates of Saddam Hussein's former palace, killing 11 members of the security forces and wounding 19. Golan Heights, Palestine, Sunday. The Washington Post confirms that Israeli soldiers shot and killed 22 protesters as Palestinian and Syrian protesters marking Naxa Day cut through barbed wire strung by Israel on the disputed border. Iraq today, a 100-day so-called cooling off period for Arab Spring protests in Iraq has expired, and there are forecasts that big protests could be coming to Iraq as soon as this Friday. The Mahdi army has already held a mass march warning that if U.S. troops stay past the December 31st deadline to leave, the Mahdi army will return to armed struggle in the battlefield. Mr. Barack Obama, Iraq had nothing to do with September 11th, and Osama bin Laden is dead. Despite this, American soldiers are still dying in both Iraq and Afghanistan. Now is the time to pull the plug, bring all the troops home, today. Iraqi men were arrested in Bowling Green, Kentucky back in May. They are being charged in a grand jury indictment in U.S. domestic courts with supporting insurgents in their home country in occupied Iraq and with conspiring to bomb U.S. troops in Iraq, a country in which many people are engaged in a state of active warfare against the United States. In other words, U.S. domestic courts are claiming battlefield jurisdiction over the Iraq War. These two men are not charged with attempting to bomb anything or anyone inside the U.S. They are charged with trying to do something in Iraq, where U.S. courts are not supposed to have jurisdiction. The two men, Awad Ramadan Alwan, age 30, and Mohammed Sharif Hamadi, age 23. Assistant Attorney General Todd Heenan said, quote, "Over the course of roughly 8 years, Awad Ramadan Alwan allegedly supported efforts to kill U.S. troops in Iraq, first by participating in the construction and placement of improvised explosive devices in Iraq, and more recently, by attempting to ship money and weapons from the United States to insurgents in Iraq." Similar charges have been filed against Hamadi. Supporting evidence against Alwan includes a fingerprint on a shell recovered in Iraq, which is not some place the FBI or U.S. courts are supposed to have jurisdiction, except for U.S. military courts over offenses committed by members of the U.S. military. Alwan was said to have been drawn into an FBI sting in which he boasted of attacking the U.S. Army in Iraq. In September 2010, Alwan was said to have shipped money and weapons to Sunni insurgents in Iraq. Hey, Department of Justice and President Obama, how is it that U.S. courts do not have the jurisdiction to judge men being held without trial in Guantanamo Bay, supposedly captured on the battlefield, but do have jurisdiction over someone else on the battlefield? These two Iraqis should be considered soldiers of their country, every bit as much as the U.S. Navy SEALs who entered Pakistan on the mission to kill Osama bin Laden were soldiers of their country. They may even regard themselves as being on an anti-terrorism mission when you think about what the U.S. has done to Iraq. Therefore, the U.S. may, under the laws of war, either hold these men as declared prisoners of war and also grant prisoner of war status to all the men in Guantanamo Bay, or else grant trials in civilian court to every detainee in Guantanamo Bay, as well as to these two Iraqis. Many have argued that civilian trials for anyone captured on any battlefield will lead to court jurisdiction over every shell fired and every bomb dropped in every war. Many in the U.S., especially Republicans and members of the military, fear this scenario. Why then is it okay for Awad Ramadan Alwan and Mohammed Sharif Hamadi to face charges in U.S. court, but not okay for those suspected of war crimes in Iraq, such as those infamous Blackwater contractors, to face trial in the civil courts of Iraq. Memorial Day, the 31st of May, 2011, Arlington Cemetery. President Obama made his usual President's Day appearance for the holiday at Arlington Cemetery, paying respect to young men sent to their graves, fighting in wars including his own. Unfortunately, three members of the violently anti-gay Westboro Baptist Church, notorious for protesting military funerals, showed up with their "God Hates Fags" signs. Worse yet, the Ku Klux Klan, that's right, the KKK, showed up as well, supposedly to counter-protest the Westboro bigots, but bearing another meaning for an African-American president.
We are with the Knights of the Southern Cross, soldiers of the Ku Klux Klan. We are here in protest of Westboro Baptist Church. I'm a veteran. I spent 9.5 years in the military.
You heard that. That was Dennis Labonte, Imperial Wizard of the KKK, or Ku Klux Klan, claiming to have served in the U.S. military. This raises two questions. One, why are members of the Ku Klux Klan, the Nazis, and other hate groups permitted to serve in the U.S. military? And two, how is it that the KKK was able to get into the Washington, D.C. area without attracting thousands of furious anti-Klan protesters like what happened in 1982 and 1990? Suppose Army recruiting ads had to have side effect warnings like drug advertisements on TV do.
The United States Army may not be right for every patient. Side effects can include distress, disillusionment, bitter resentment, isolation, traumatic and post-traumatic stress, sociopathic behavior, uncontrollable sobbing, uncontrollable violence, prosecutions for war crimes, prosecutions for domestic crimes, loss of contact with loved ones, loss of ability to love, brain injuries, blindness, depleted uranium poisoning, flashbacks, horror of death, horror of being away from death, loss of the use of limbs, loss of limbs, death, suicide, excruciating pain, the desire to feel excruciating pain, overwhelming rage and misery, loss of hearing, punishment by the Army for failure to obey illegal orders, punishment by courts of law or by enemy forces for obeying illegal orders, torture, humiliation, shame, dangerous habits of blind subservience, or the wasting of what could have been the best years of your life. If you experience any of these symptoms, deal with it, sucker. You already signed your name on the dotted line.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. On the 27th of May, U.S. Park Police violently arrested several people for dancing inside the Jefferson Memorial. This week, on the 4th of June, an overwhelming number of dancing protesters retook the Jefferson Memorial. Police made no arrests, but instead pushed them out and blocked anyone else from approaching the memorial.
Last week there was a group that came to protest the fact that a judge had decided that there's no dancing here. And I was arrested literally for swaying back and forth.
We're moving, man.
We're
in love.
We're touching each other. Sorry, we're stopping.
What are you doing?
We're stopping.
What are you doing?
You're not arresting us for standing
for here. For what? You didn't even give me a warning.
Others were body slammed and choked.
Sir, this is your last warning.
I've got a bad shoulder.
Put your hand behind your back.
And so today we have a lot more people coming to say, we as Americans think we have the right to dance. let the dancers dance in peace. Let's see what happens.
If they're arrested today and not eligible for release, they won't be released until Monday.
Why are people being arrested for silent
protest? Ma'am, I don't make the laws. I function as our court liaison. I'm just here to help.
So if I go in there and just go like this by myself, will I be arrested?
I'm not making that determination. That is
who will make that determination?
The officials in charge of the city.
Could you ask somebody? I'd like to know exactly what movements I'm allowed to do. See, one of the problems in this whole thing is they can't tell you what dancing is. You know, when I say, if I do this in the chamber, will I be arrested? She said, we're going to give you ample warning. I said, well, ample warning for what? That I have to stand still, that I can't move, I couldn't go like this, and, you know, they won't define it.
This is a cause that transcends partisanship or ideology of any kind, because this is about basic human dignity. So let's dance!
Dance, dance, revolution! But no slam dancing.
This is what freedom looks like. This is what we look like.
This is what freedom looks like.
Yeah!
The whole world is watching you right now. Should I go to the right
yeah. Let's go. Please move out this way. Thank you. Just for safety reasons, I need you to move. Thank you. Start moving.
The area is actually temporarily closed. You proceed out the columns. Thank you.
We can dance! We can dance! We're not under your control! We can dance! We can dance!
Liberty is our goal!
So I think it is quite amazing that so many of us were inside expressing ourselves through joy, and the police were there armed to the teeth, but they didn't do a thing. And that is beautiful. And that's showing a lesson in democracy, not only to the park police, but to the rest of this country and around the world.
Yeah.
That we as Americans believe deeply in our freedoms. We hold those freedoms so dearly that we are willing to get arrested if need be. We didn't come here to get arrested. We came here to dance.
Yeah.
And we danced, and we danced, and we danced. Did you have a good time?
Yeah.
Are you happy?
Yeah.
Police were very unhappy that Russia Today and other mainstream news outlets were able to enter the Jefferson Memorial for this protest and went out of their way to keep anyone else from approaching while they, quote, secured the area and closed the memorial to everyone.
There are those who say you can't fight City Hall. There are those who say protesting is a waste of time. DC, however, they've just been proven wrong. When DC Council Chairman Kwame Brown proposed to close all homeless shelters to avoid raising taxes on the rich, about 200 protesters swarmed the Wilson Building. When they went to Kwame Brown's office, some warned that if homeless people were turned out of shelters, riots would be next.
There were tent cities. And that's what this city is going to turn into if we don't save these benefits and shelters for people to live in. Now, also, after Dr. King's death, there were riots, or at least a riot, a terrible riot that affected a large part of the city. That can also happen. So you either go to jail now, or you go to jail next year.
They got that about the riots. As a result, Kwame Brown threw in the towel, and the shelters will stay open. He still chose to nickel and dime the middle class with fees instead of taxing the rich. But remember, it wasn't the middle class saying they would riot. And it wasn't the middle class looking at sleeping outdoors every night except during hypothermia season. Protest works. You can fight City Hall. Don't just vote. Organize. Get together with your neighbors and those you know the most. Stand up to Walmart. Stand up to City Hall.
City, this is movement music. Have you heard the news?
Walmart's coming,
coming. Georgia Avenue, uptown, ain't that something?
Something.
Small businesses, shop owners, hearts pumping, cause they know their livelihoods is about to take a thumping.
Something.
See, you can't compete with a superstore who's an importer of slave laborers. Craftsmanship, low price to flip to undercut the market. Hand over fist.
Walmart
is infamous for the way they behave. Low wage pay, treat the workers like slaves. Employees who try to unionize, soon find themselves in unemployment lines. The way they treat women needs improving. 1.6 million sisters are suing them for being paid less than the male equivalent. On these issues and more, we can't afford to be ignorant.
Keep DC Walmart free. It won't benefit you or me. They ain't about spreading love in the community. They ain't about Chocolate City unity. Opportunists stop to make a buck quick. Suck up all your resources and then they split. They try to come across as if they legit, but really their motives are counterfeit.
This is the Funkinest Journalist with your three Walmart commandments. Step one, move in and crush competition by underselling. Step two, pay workers nothing and block unionization. Step three, take all that money, put it into the Walton Family Foundation, and turn that into political influence to protect yourself and make even more.
Walmart,
it's not a good fit for Chocolate City. Let me holler black at you with the skinny. Important that you clearly understand and remember, DC doesn't work with the right wing agenda. The Walton families are big contributors to bigoted representatives and senators. Trent Lott, sinister. Strom Thurmond, similar. Confederate state loving George Bush ministers. Oversee your plantation mentality. Results in black and brown casualties. Statehood opposition for the district has been supported by Walmart's mischief. The DC Voting Rights Act was defeated, assisted via Walmart PACs, and now they wanna come here to see their money stack. Stay up on the facts. Chocolate City, don't relax and fight back.
Keep DC Walmart free. It won't benefit you or me.
They ain't about spreading love in the community. They ain't about Chocolate City unity. Opportunists stop to make a buck quick. Suck up all your resources and then they split. They try to come across as if they legit, but really their motives are counterfeit.
Keep DC Walmart free is an emerging activist group of DC residents stepping up to challenge the corporate big box invasion of Chocolate City. Walmart has plans to establish 4 stores in DC by 2012. Walmarts in DC will threaten small businesses, cause loss of more jobs than it will bring to the community, and lower the wage standards for all workers. To find out more and get involved, visit walmartfreedc.org.
This is Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith.
I'll do everything I can to protect whales and the other beings in the ocean. Not for people, but for them.
What would you do to save the animals and the ecosphere? How far would you go? Paul Watson says humans are a violent and dangerous species. The environmentalist and early founder of Greenpeace in Vancouver went to the edge of violence to save seals, dolphins, and especially the whales from human slaughter. I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock and Earthbeat. I've just seen the premiere of a new film biography, Eco-Pirate, The Story of Paul Watson. We see young Paul on a dying whale, standing pat in front of an advancing icebreaker, ramming a rogue whaling ship, and taking on the Japanese whaling fleet year after year in harsh Antarctic waters. Writer and director Trish Dolman spent years on the ships of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. She includes the harshest critics in her film, making this the definitive biography of one of the Earth's greatest environmentalists. Let's get straight to Paul's update on the new Sea Shepherd actions. his good news for Wales, and the lively Q&A with a wildly supportive audience in Vancouver, Canada, where the man started his 40-year voyage for the Earth's defenseless creatures. This is Paul Watson and Trish Dolman, recorded by Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock and Earthbeat Radio at the Projecting Change 2011 Film Festival, May 27th.
Well, I know everyone wants to hear Paul talk, but I just want to say a couple things because there's a couple more people I want to thank. Leah Mallon, who's in the audience, worked on the film, helping me develop it early on. And then I really need to thank my producer, Kevin Eastwood, who's not here tonight. He's actually working on another show for Animal Planet called Animal Hoarders, so he's running around the States, but he tirelessly worked on this film for the last 3.5 years, and it really did take a village of people to make it. So one of the things for me that about making the film, it's been a great honor to actually be able to interview some of the giants of the environmental movement, obviously Paul, but Paul Spong, Rex Weiler, all these people who, you know, created incredible change starting in the 60s and 70s. And one of the greatest moments for me was being on the ship. And it really dawned on me when we were patrolling the Galapagos that the oceans are a vast place. And I think because humans are land mammals, we tend to think that people are following regulations. And it was like a light bulb going on, knowing that they're pretty lawless. And Paul is a unique individual in the world doing the work he does. So thanks, Paul.
Thanks. Just wanted to update, this year we went back down with 3 ships, and this was our most effective year ever. The Japanese whaling fleet took only 15% of their quota, and they left a month and a half earlier than expected, and I don't think they're going to come back. But if they do, we'll be back there waiting for them. Meanwhile, the Steve Irwin and is in southern France. We replaced the Adigil with the a new vessel, which we named Gojira, which means Godzilla. Godzilla, actually, Gojira means in Japanese gorilla whale, so we thought it was quite appropriate. I just couldn't resist the headlines of Godzilla chases whaling fleet out of Antarctica. You know, in Japan, of course, Gojira in Japan has a completely different meaning. But unfortunately, the only thing more frightening than Godzilla is Godzilla's lawyers. And so we were told we couldn't use the name, but that's okay. It fulfilled its function. And then 2 days ago, we just renamed the vessel, so it's now the Brigitte Bardot, and gave us a terrific media coverage in France there 2 days ago. So the Brigitte Bardot is with the Steve Irwin in Toulon, and in a couple of days, we'll be leaving to go to the coast of Libya. And the reason being is that the poachers are going to take advantage of the war zone, and the EU has assured us that any fishing vessel we find in that zone, we can cut their nets and free the fish, that any fishing vessel is illegal. Now, last year we cut the nets and released 800 tuna, and when people are concerned about our safety this year, it's much safer this year than it was last year. First of all, no Libyan Air Force. Second of all, no Libyan Navy. We just have to worry about friendly fire from NATO, but we'll keep them advised as to where we are. And right after that, we will be taking the vessels to the International Whaling Commission meeting this year, which is in July, and it's being held in Jersey, in the Isle of Jersey. And then from there, we'll be going up to the Danish Faroe Islands to interfere with the killing of pilot whales there. Also, we've had a crew in Japan for the last 6 months, and they succeeded in cutting the dolphin kill quota by half. 800 dolphins were killed this year, but 800 were killed, but every year it's usually about 1600 to 1800. So, you know, but that was a 6 month crew on the ground for 6 months. And in fact, we almost lost them because on March, I think the 12th, our crew were in of all the days to go to the northern part of the island to check out dolphin killing. They were in Iwate Prefecture when our crew leader noticed the water being sucked out of the harbor. And they got up on top of a hill just in time, and 9 minutes later, the tsunami wiped out that entire town. And we lost them for about 40 hours, but in true Sea Shepherd fashion, the next morning they commandeered a Japanese fire truck and drove them way down the hill. Unfortunately, Japan treats us really as like, it's almost an honor, really. They treat us like we're a foreign nation that they're at war with. And they've been putting a lot of pressure on it. I'm now officially, by the way, on the Interpol blue list. What that means is I'm not wanted for anything, but people are instructed to give me a hard time when I cross borders. And I first learned about this when I drove from here down to Washington. And I happen to hold both passports, so they can't keep me out of the U.S., can't keep me out of Canada, much of the frustration in both countries. But as I drove down across the border, I just calmly handed my passport over, not suspecting anything, and suddenly the officer said, "Put your hand on the wheel now, sir." And all of a sudden, sirens started going off, and my hands are on the wheel, and I noticed that there was guys behind concrete blocks with guns aimed at me. And they said, "Throw out your keys." "Well, I can't throw out my keys with my hands on the wheel." So then he got me out of the car, handcuffed me, threw me in, and 10 minutes later I was on my way, because apparently there's no warrant for my arrest. But what I found out is that I'm on the document as armed and dangerous eco-terrorist. Now, what we've managed to do, I've managed to make this work for me now, so that just yesterday coming into Chicago, we call ahead now and everything gets cleared, but I'm met at the airport by the Homeland Security guys, who I know now and very friendly, and they escort me right to the front of the line and out the door. I'm out there before everybody else, so I'm getting the VIP, I call it the blue list VIP treatment, and so very thankful to Japan for that. Hopefully we won't have to go back. And we're actually making other progress. Right after that, I was invited by the president of Palau to come visit him in March. And we were requested if we could help them. And so we said, yeah, we'll provide our vessel, the Bob Barker. We'll take it and send it to Palau to police their waters, because all of these island nations are getting just completely plundered by illegal fishing operations. There's more illegal fishing in the world now than there is legal fishing. And so we agreed and we signed a contract with the Palau government to officially police their waters. Well, Japan found out about that. They sent a delegation. Despite the earthquake and the tsunami, they still sent a delegation down there to demand that Palau not work with us. And, of course, the president didn't give in on this. But then they said, well, we'll give you a patrol boat and the money to run it. And so the president called me. I said, well, take the patrol boat and take the money. That's great. You know, so which he did, and now we're going to Nauru and the Cook Islands and the Marshall Islands. I think we can get Japan to provide patrol boats to everybody this way. So thank you. We'd be very pleased to answer any questions anybody has.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock and Earthbeat. You've just heard Captain Paul Watson of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society and director Trish Dolman following the premiere of the new film Eco Pirate, The Story of Paul Watson. Let's go straight to the question and answer period in Vancouver.
All right, questions right here.
Thank you for your remarkable work. I wonder how we can use some of the same techniques you've used for marine mammals to protect all species in global warming. What kinds of exciting, important, revolutionary techniques do you think we can use there?
I think really what you need to concentrate on is that the solution to all these problems lies in the passion, the courage, and the imagination of individuals, and not to depend on governments. They never solve problems, they cause problems, but to depend upon that kind of passion. And just imagination is really the way to find out about it, or to find these solutions. When people say that, it's so overwhelming, I mean, what can we do? I mean, it's impossible. Well, I think that the answer is always the impossible one. You just have to be able to visualize that answer. For instance, in 1972, the very idea that Nelson Mandela would be president of South Africa was unthinkable, unimaginable, and impossible. Yet it happened. So I think we can solve these problems, and that's why I take an optimistic outlook on this.
Next question.
In the film, you said there was a question of your retiring. What's your comment on that?
Well, first of all, I've never, ever believed in retirement. My grandfather, my mother's father, died at 96, and he was murdered. So he was working till the day he died. He still managed to wound the guy enough that he was arrested. So I don't believe in retirement, and I don't intend to retire. In fact, I'm quite enjoying what I'm doing. And I don't know. People seem to think I'm getting old or something. That question keeps coming up all the time. I'm not that old. I'm the youngest founding member of Greenpeace.
How old are you?
Well... In December, I turned 60.
Question. He won't retire. Having been on the ships, I don't think Paul will ever retire.
In the year 2000, when the tsunami hit Southeast Asia, the Canadian government financed the rebuilding of fish boats in Sri Lanka. And the Canadian press, when the tsunami hit Japan a couple of months ago, it was considered to be unethical to raise the issue that this was some kind of karma that was due to them. Maybe you'd like to comment on that.
Oh, no, the earthquake and the tsunami in Japan were not karma. It's a question of geography and geology. And so I actually get very upset when people say the Japanese deserve this. It's not the Japanese people. It's just like, you know, you and I are not responsible for the seal hunt as Canadians, just as the average Japanese is not responsible for the killing of whales and the killing of dolphins. It's a certain segment of these societies. And ultimately, it falls on the government. In this country, the single most corrupt and probably ridiculous bureaucracy in this country is the Department of Fisheries and Oceans. They are totally incompetent. They destroyed the cod fishery on the East Coast, and they will wipe out the salmon on the West Coast. These people are environmental criminals, and, you know, they're always saying, oh, well, we have the best scientists in the world. You know, they have the best biostitutes in the world. These are people who come up with the scientific justifications for their political policies, and that, you know, and they're wrong. They've been wrong consistently. Well, you know, I hate to say that. As long as this country keeps voting for assholes like Stephen Harper, then it's all going to go down the tube. That man is an ecological criminal. You know today that we dropped $200,000 bombs on Libya? What the hell is Canada thinking?
Any more questions? Follow that one. Oh, here we go. It's getting fired up.
Hi, Paul. I would like to just preface this real fast. I ran for the Pirate Party Canada in Vancouver Centre during this last election. I was asked by a reporter, is there somebody who you'd want to be? And I said, well, I don't want to be anybody. I want to be Travis McCrae, but I would like to have Paul Watson say one day, you know that Travis McCrae is a pretty good guy. And I'm also, Peter just told me that I'm probably going to be the communications officer on one of your ships. I have no problem dying in your name, or, you know, in the name of in your name, but in the name of the environment under your command.
You ran for Vancouver Centre?
Yes, I did.
You and I have that in common. I ran for MP for Vancouver Centre. We both lost.
So, now, my real question is, I've noticed that, especially with a lot of the young people, we don't have balls anymore. I mean, I think that's it. I mean, people are not standing up and going out and standing up for what they believe in as much as they used to. At least, you know, I look at the videos of the 60s and everybody going out. Okay, what is your opinion on that?
I disagree completely. I mean, if it wasn't for the passion and the courage of the individuals that crew my ships, we wouldn't be able to do anything. And I've got 2,000 crew applications right now, more than we've ever had. And the hardest part of my job on that is saying no to so many people. You know, we don't want to, but we just don't have the room. This last campaign to Antarctica was 88 crew from 23 different nations on 3 different ships. And these are the people who make our organization effective. And I'm seeing more and more young people getting involved, more so, I would say, than in the 70s or the 80s. So I completely take a different view on that, really. I think that there's a much more involvement, and I'm very optimistic about that.
Can I just add to that, too? I think it's the world's changed. I mean, people used to take to the streets perhaps more visibly than people do now, and that was more effective then, and the world has changed and become much more sophisticated. So now I think there's far more room for people and young people to use the internet, to use YouTube, to use all these things that didn't exist 30 years ago to spread a social message. And I think there's lots of people doing that are inspired by people like Paul and Sea Shepherd. So it's just different. The playing field is different.
One of the things that, you know, we're constantly criticized because of the way we do things and everything, but the reality of it is that in the entire history of our organization, we've never injured anybody. We've never had anybody seriously injured. We've never actually committed a felony or been convicted of a felony crime. You know, 2 years ago, I was invited to give a lecture to the FBI Academy in Quantico, of all things, and they actually paid me to come lecture the FBI. And one of the FBI agents said, well, you know, Sea Shepherd's walking a pretty damn fine line when it comes to the law. And I said, well, who cares how fine it is as long as you don't cross the line. So they couldn't disagree with that logic. But one of them said, well, you know, people come into Sea Shepherd and they learn how to be eco-terrorists. You know, there's some of your ex-crew members have gone on to be eco-terrorists, whatever that is. I don't think they're working for British Petroleum, but anyway, But I said, so how am I responsible for what people do when they leave Sea Shepherd? You train them, you're responsible. I said, okay, I have three names for you. Lee Harvey Oswald, Timothy McVeigh, and Osama bin Laden. You train them, you're responsible. Actually, three of them joined. I don't know if that's to keep tabs on us or not.
Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Love you.
Thanks.
Do you still live in Gig Harbor?
Never did live in Gig
Harbor. Oh, where?
Friday Harbor.
Friday Harbor. Are you still there?
About 2 weeks a year.
Oh, well, that's true. Well, you're our national treasure, despite DFO. Where do we stand on the seal hunt, or the Sea Shepherd stance on the seal hunt? It's a real black mark on our country.
The Canadian seal hunt, for all intents and purposes, is over. There's no market. Europe has banned the seal pelts. Are banned. China just banned seal pelts. But Canada just can't let it go. So this idiot who runs DFO, with Gail Shea, whatever.
Gail Shea, yeah.
Shea, yeah. She just set the quota at 460,000, the highest quota in the history of the seal hunt. Absolutely ridiculous. What was that all about? Thumbing their nose at Europe. It's a bunch of kindergarten guys that are in there just fighting with each other. It's ridiculous. But how many seals are going to be killed this year? Maybe 50, 60,000, which is a lot, but still a lot less the quota because there's no money in it. We have effectively destroyed the market, and that is the only language anybody understands, is profit and loss. Now, the one thing, the government wants us to go back in there, but we're not doing it, because they know that if we go back in there, it will just rile up everybody and all this national patriotism and everything, and let's go kill a seal in order to piss off Sea Shepherd. We're not going to do it. The seal hunt is dying, and we're going to let it die. Now we're going to turn our attentions to trying to stop the slaughter of seals in Namibia. So that's what we'll be doing for now. But I think that within a couple of years, it'll die out a natural death. After, you know, and they will no longer have seal stew in the parliament buildings, and Harper won't be walking around with a silly little sealskin briefcase and everything. You know, and you don't have the governor general eating raw seal hearts on television like, you know, some sort of barbarian princess. I mean, the thing is getting... You know, Canada's just been really crazy on this, but I think we'll grow up.
I just want to add one thing to that. I cut about an hour out of the film that was all about the seal hunt, because at one time it was much, much longer. But two things. Elizabeth May said that she felt that the seal hunt was the biggest distraction away from the decimation of the cod fishery, and that's why the Canadian government pursues it, is to keep both fisher people and activists focused on the seal hunt and not thinking about or focusing their attention on the decimation of one of the greatest fish species on the planet, which I thought was very astute. And then I was interviewing a guy who's in charge of PR for the DFO about the seal hunt. And when I asked him, I said, well, don't you see that the role of activists, because they're you know, vociferously against people like Paul or anyone who opposes a seal hunt, and in fact kind of hate them. And I said, well, don't you see that the social function of an activist is to create change, to create social change, and that activists have actually caused you to change your approach to the seal hunt and try to make it more humane. Otherwise, you never would have cared, because now they run around saying, well, it's humane, it's humane. And the guy turned to me, he goes, you know, I never actually thought of that way. And that, to me, was one of the reasons why I wanted to make this film, is I think people have forgotten the importance of and the social function of activists like Paul Watson. So
one conversation that we had out in the ice with the Coast Guard actually was very funny. I said to the Coast Guard, what are you doing out here? And he says, well, we're protecting the fishermen from people like you, sir. I said, well, who's protecting the seals? And the guy came back and he said, I understand that's your job, sir.
On that note, Paul, thank you very much. Trish, thank you very much, both of you guys.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, absolutely, one more thing.
I'd just like to say that I'd like to just recognize the one person who means more to me than anybody else and who has stood by me, and that's my daughter, Lily Alani. Thank you.
And if I can just say a few words on behalf of the festival, thank you guys so much for being here. And I just really want to ask you guys for your support, because organizations like Projecting Change provide the platform for Trish to bring her movies here to share with all of you guys. Sea Shepherd is there for you guys to support so they can save the animals. So please get involved. Get on the Sea Shepherd website, the Projecting Change. Come out and see more films, support more filmmakers, so that we can support more eco-terrorists. All right? So take care, guys.
That was Paul Watson, founder and captain of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, with Trish Dolman, writer and director of the new film, Eco Pirate, The Story of Paul Watson. This full-length movie will be released in July. Find links in my blog at ecoshock.info or at screensiren.ca. This was, hands down, the best green documentary I've seen this year. The Arctic footage and shipboard life alone was stunning. Writer Dolman did not create a fan film. She went to Watson's critics, and there are many, from the Japanese ambassador through Canadian officials, even to wives and a daughter left behind on shore. The story of early Greenpeace is woven in, with a careful look at nonviolence versus direct action. There is love and danger when ships collide in the open seas, and you are there as part of the crew. In the end, despite criticism and doubts, admiration for Paul Watson cannot be denied. Certainly the living marine mammals he saved would vote for his life of activism, which incidentally never cost a human life. I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock and Earthbeat. I recorded this event at the Projecting Change 2011 Film Festival in Vancouver, Canada, on May 27th. Find out more at ecoshock.info. There is no copyright on this work. Spread it around. Be sure and check out the movie Eco Pirate when it comes out. And find out more about Paul Watson at seashepherd.org.